OTB AM.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
Now, Andy Lee is with us to talk to us about his top five boxing movies of all time. Andy, how
are
you doing?
Good, yeah. How are you?
No pressure here.
I know, yeah.
Definitive list.
I feel like I'm opening myself up for a lot of scrutiny here. But the truth is, I don't watch a lot of boxing movies. I wouldn't, just because it's boxing, I wouldn't go in and say, oh, I have to see that film, yeah. You know? If anything, it would kind of turn me away from it.
Because there's very few that are actually any good.
Yeah, a lot of them just tend to play on the cliches, and I don't know. I guess it's kind of hard to suspend the reality or disbelief, whatever it is. But when it is good and when it's done right, it's definitely the best sport in terms of
movies.
Yeah, movies. Yeah.
Culture in general.
Cinematic. I think it's, and maybe that's just because anyone can relate to being in a fight, you know, and and then what you have to do to go through that, you know. I think.
You wanted to talk a bit about some of the ones that didn't work. So here's Jake Gyllenhaal in Southpaw.
yeah, in an orthodox stance. That was enough for me. I seen the preview. I looked at this and I said, oh, Southpaw, standing orthodox. I didn't even switch it on, but... no, there's a whole lot of probably good films, and I'm probably doing them a disservice, that I didn't actually watch. Like, I know... Vinny Panzienza had a recent biography out, it was called Bleed for This. And he's got an incredible story. You know, he was paralyzed and fought his way back, trained himself and fought his way back.
It was the Miles Teller movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, Miles Teller. Did you see it?
Yeah, it was pretty good. We had him on the show, actually, Vinny Panzienza. Very interesting story. Very kind of like a three-dimensional guy.
Yeah, character.
Almost like a Rocky Marciano type in terms of the 3D nature you get of him as a character and as a man, which sometimes often makes these movies so great. Mm. As in, you have very obvious flaws with characters, which ultimately these are movies about boxing rather than a boxing movie to a certain extent, you know.
And that's one of my I have on the waterfront number three. I think that's questionable. Is that a boxing movie?
We always include it in this list of top 10 sports films.
Just the performance of Brando. It's boxing, I guess, the hot driver, really, you know.
Well, that hinge scene in the whole thing where he confronts his brother.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most famous scenes in cinema.
Yeah.
That scene in the back of the car where he finally has the courage to confront his brother. And for a lot of boxers, that's so on the nose because you have these relationships with a manager or, in his case, his brother, which even makes it worse. And they're telling you what to do all the time. And a lot of fighters... they need to be told what to do. You know, they just want guidance, you know, and all they want to do is train and think and fight. And they kind of, you put your trust in somebody and you kind of have to go with them blindly, no matter what they say. And then if it comes to the point, and even if you have a suspicion that they don't have your best interests at heart, it's very hard to confront that, you know. It's like that teacher-pupil kind of dynamic. And that's why that scene is so powerful.
It's employer as well. That's obviously an allegory for everything that's going on in the background with the workers who are getting completely ridden by the dockyards. It's like the little man, no matter how hard he tries, always gets screwed.
Yeah. And,
that scene is iconic. You can kind of make the case that that's even better than your number one. I mean, we can do this in reverse order.
It's very hard to put any of these on the list, and there's so many other films that I didn't put on the list, like Fat City, which is, you know, it's a great book and it's a really good film as well.
I don't know Fat City at all. What's that?
It's a film with Stacey Cheech, who would have been like a Brando in his day himself, a rebel kind of an actor. But it also has a young Jeff Bridges. You know, he's about 18 in it, so it's really his start.
It's got a 100% record on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's only got about 21 reviews or something, but still, 21 out of 21 ain't bad.
Yeah.
It's one of the only movies I've seen. That's
like, I haven't put what started it for me as a child, but was my fantasy, the Rocky movies, you know, the Rocky franchise. I haven't put that on the list, which is probably wrong because that did so much for boxing.
The Club of Lang here.
I know. Yeah, and it's such a cultural, you know, reference point now Rocky Balboa.
And Creed was decent.
Yeah, no,
Creed 2 announced yesterday.
The trailer. I didn't get past the first 15 minutes of Creed.
Right.
No, I just, whatever it was about, I just, nah. I don't know,
Tony Belly didn't do it for you.
No, you give it, like, you know, this day and age, you don't have to sit through, like, years ago, if you've you committed to a film, yeah, you want to sit down and watch it. But like this day and age, there's so much good stuff that you can just, you know, skip it over, you know.
I don't know. I enjoyed. Look, I mean, I watched Creed.
No, everyone speaks well of it. Like, you know,
I didn't stand and watch it though. I kind of was wandering around doing other stuff and going, oh, I'll come in and watch this scene. And then I went out and watched it. Like, I wasn't kind of sitting there glued to it. But it was passable, I thought.
I must give it a second chance.
I
don't know. I just
tolerance for that is pretty low. So Rocky, I remember I saw Rocky IV in the cinema. The other Rockies I've only ever kind of seen after the fact, but like that was kind of peak Cold War class.
It was
just completely
the training montage, you know, where Rocky's doing the very old school and Ivan Drago's going and doing all the modern techniques and stuff. It was class, and then the death of Apollo Creed, and you know, it had all those emotional triggers that you wanted to see, you know.
Yeah.
And my personal favorite was Rocky III. It's probably not the best of the Rocky movies, but you know, he got to fight Hulk Hogan, and he fought Clubber Lang, you know, B.A. Brockus or whatever, you know, Mr. T, AKA. And I thought that was my favorite, you know.
Why?
He trains with Apollo, doesn't he? You know, he goes back and goes back to like the black tough gym and learns how to he learns how to box, really, you know, and gets rhythm and the montage of that training montage where he's in the gym and he looks really stupid at the start, can't even skip rope, and then he kind of conquers that, you know, I don't know, when you're a kid, I haven't probably seen it in, I don't know, 20 years or so, you know.
Just like you and the Kronk.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's kind of, I think it was like, I heard somewhere that it was kind of based on the Kronk, the gym they use.
Okay,
you know,
right.
It was really good, really good film.
Let's go back to your top five and actually talk about these then. So we can stick that up there. Number five is Cinderella Man. Number four is Somebody Up There Likes Me. Number three is On the Waterfront. Number two is Journeyman. And number one is Raging Bull. So let's talk about Journeyman, because this is, you've got a personal involvement with this.
Yeah. It's like it's only been released earlier this year, and it was kind of limited release. It's not a film a lot of people would have saw, but Paddy Considine, who wrote it, directed it, and acts in it, I would know him personally. He's been to a few of my fights, and there was a chance we could have got him on the show. It just didn't work out, so we will get him in again just to ask him about, you know, get it from the horse's mouth. But yeah, I knew he was making a boxing film, so you know, he started getting in touch with boxers, and we had some exchanges, you know, back and forth, and he'd come to a couple of my fights. But I went to see this film after I retired, and I couldn't be like, when I left the cinema, I was so happy that I was retired, because I couldn't imagine being in my position as an aging boxer, having watched this film. And you know, Joe sent me the link of Michael Bisping.
Yeah.
He referenced the movie and his decision to retire.
He said he got off the flight, watched the film, got off the flight, and retired. I was like,
I know.
So just explain the film, will you? Because
it centers around this character called Matty Burton, and in a lot of ways, like when I watched the film, why I was so affected by it, there were so many parallels to my life and career, and how my life could have went had a fight gone the wrong way for me, especially later on when I had knockdowns against Jackson and against Quillen and Saunders, you know?
Yeah.
He was WBO middleweight champion. He was married with a young daughter. And, you know, that's my life in a nutshell. And, like, he suffers after a fight. He wins the fight. I don't want to give any spoilers now, but he comes home and starts to get a really bad headache. And it turns out he has swelling on the brain. And he has to suffer through, like, and deal with that, you know, and come to terms with that. And the film is so on the, like, he got so many of the little, he really did his research, because so many of the little details, even down to, like I was watching, like, oh, you know, when I was watching the film, I was like, oh, look at that, you know, I was just giving my wife a little nudge, and she would have seen it all. Like, after he wins a fight, his wife comes to give him a hug, and he has to pull away because he's so sore.
Yeah.
And, like, I've never seen that in a boxing film, but that's why the way it is, because you can't, you can barely breathe. Your body's so battered that to expand your rib cage is, you know, it really hurts.
Yeah.
So like, all the small details are right, and like he used a lot of like boxing extras, a lot of boxing journalists in the film, and coincidentally, Brendan Ingle, who recently passed away, plays his father in the film.
Right. Okay.
So it's a really nice touch there. You know, it's another thing, like, it shows he's watching, goes back and watches footage of when he won the title, and what they do after the fight is they just go back to a room and celebrate. You know, not a big, just amongst themselves.
Yeah.
He's with his dad and they're all taking photos. And I have the exact same footage of me after I won the world title. So it was just so many things that I was like, oh, this is like a parallel. I know it's probably totally personal, but like, I'm not ashamed to admit it. Like, I must have cried maybe 3 times during the film.
Right.
And I can't remember the last time I cried other than that, you know, for major things that had happened to me. But the film is really emotive, and it will stay with you for a long time.
That's class. Well, hopefully we'll all get a chance to see it. Do you know if there's plans for it to...
I think it'll be re-released. I'm sure it'll come on DVD. It will be out soon. I think it might be finished as cinema release now. He was due to come over. I'd seen it in the Dublin Film Festival, so it should be out for a wider release soon, or a DVD release soon.
Apparently it's out on DVD, Joseph was just saying, so hopefully it hits Netflix or we can get it soon, because it's called Journeyman and it sounds great.
Yeah, it's a really good film, yeah.
Somebody Up There Likes Me.
Yeah, that's just a personal favourite. I really
called it the hipster's choice.
No, I it's a great film. I loved it since I was about this big, so, you know, maybe I'm a bonus. But it's, you know, just the performance of Paul Newman. And, you know, just the scenes of New York, the Lower East Side, it's the Rocky Graciano story, and, you know, how, he, like, in his own life, he had been in trouble as a youth, had an abusive father, and then comes out, picks up boxing, he was getting in trouble with the law, and kind of had a knack for it, and went on to be middleweight world champion, so.
Because there is another movie called Somebody Up There Likes Me. It's a really bad Nick Offerman movie from 2012, like, oh, just really? Such a popcorn American comedy flick. So I'm glad it is the boxing version of that, which I did assume. Yeah. But it, like, the Paul Newman angle, is like, this essentially launched his career to a certain extent. Yeah. It was one of his first feature films.
And like I could watch him in anything, like, in terms of just this happens to be a boxing movie, but I think he's like one of the greatest actors of all time. Like, when you look at his catalogue of films, he's as good as they get.
Yeah. I didn't realise that Graziano was a contemporary of Jake LaMotta, that they were actually in juvie together.
Yeah, they would have been around New York at the same time, you know.
And, and they both fought Sugar Ray Robinson as a key figure in both their careers.
Yeah, he would have been, and a few other ones, like Tony Gennaro and Tony Zale, they would have fought all this around the same time. So that was a truly great period for middleweights. But like, there is a connection, there's a guy called Kevin Mahan who lives in New York, and I became friends with him when I would have been living in New York around 2009 to 2011, that kind of time. This guy would come to the gym and just watch me train. I never, would always be quiet. So eventually I would say, well, what's your name? And blah, blah, we got talking. And I eventually come to realize, after knowing him for about 2 or 3 months, that he played Tony Gennaro in Raging Bull.
All right.
Yeah. And he used to knock around with Tony Graciano and Tony Graciano's brother.
Right.
And so there is, it comes out, this guy was from West Virginia, an Irish-American, never boxed in his life, but had a dream of being a boxer, moved to New York at 17, was sleeping on the streets, and ended up training in Customato's gym. And wasn't really a fighter, you know, wasn't really much of a boxer. But one day he just watched Taxi Driver, and he said he could relate to that film, being in New York and being alone. And then one day he walks Martin Scorsese, Jake LaMotta, and Rob De Niro, and they say, who's that kid in the ring? And he said, that's Kevin Mahan. He said, well, I want him to be trained with De Niro for the fight. And they eventually give him the part of Tony Gennaro. People remember, because he's the one that takes the beating. He says, he ain't pretty anymore.
Yeah.
That's him. That's Kevin. So that's my connection to
Raging
Bull.
That's pretty class. Yeah.
But this is just, without boxing, it's a great film. This is one of the all-time great films of all time.
It makes all the top 10 lists of top 10 movies of all time very regularly. And from time to time, it kind of surges to number one, depending on who's making the list.
You got with De Niro and Scorsese, it's a winning team. And then with Paul Schrader, the writer, it's a great, you know, it's a great film. I don't know, I can't really say enough about it, but just the performances and what he put his body through, losing the weight, gaining weight, and just how he embodied that figure, you know, and how he captured Jake LaMotta. I think Jake LaMotta, sometimes it happens that you become more famous because of not what you actually did in your career. People probably know Jake LaMotta more so because of this. He was a subject of the film.
Definitely, yeah. Without question.
Yeah.
It's interesting, the New York angle just on all of this, and kind of how that's so inextricably linked to a lot of these movies. And like, I think I recall Scorsese talking about On the Waterfront a few years ago. Like, I'm not sure, was it inside the actor's studio or something like that, where he starts to talk about On the Waterfront, as you say, not just a boxing movie, as a movie that informed his view of New York in a cinematic sense, that it was like, wait a minute, this society that I grew up in could actually be depicted in such a 3D way. It's not kind of, you know, stereotypically one-dimensional. This is something that kind of, I look at that character and I'm like, I know that guy. That's the guy that grew up down the street from me, or I know that guy. And it was accurate. It was kind of the thing that informed him when you look at his movies about the city, and kind of so inspirational when it comes to one of the greatest directors and his view of New York City, that to call them boxing films is almost doing them an injustice.
Yeah. Like, there's so much, and like that film, the screenplay is done by Bud Schoenberg, who's a boxing writer himself. I would have met his son when I lived in New York through George Kimball.
Right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of connections, like, and it's just, it is a small world in boxing. And boxing and movies, boxing and movie business, they kind of flirt together. They kind of, you know, they like...
the glamour from both of them.
Yeah, like, yeah. I always say this, and it's such a cliche, like, all boxers want to be actors and all actors want to be boxers. You know, there's, they kind of have this weird appreciation, and it's kind of weird to see the two worlds meet, and
yeah,
you know, like, I want to be like you, and the other guy's like, I want to be like you, you know. But there are so many and there's, I guess there's a lot of parallels in that when you go into the ring, you have to be somebody else, you have to act, and you have to perform, and it's a similar state for, I guess, to be a good actor, you have to become somebody else.
Yeah, you did stuff in the Fringe Festival, didn't you?
Yeah, I had dabbled a little bit in acting, and I did a bit in the theatre festival. I was in a play called Chekhov's First Play, and it was really great. Like, I was more nervous before I walked out onto that stage than I was
really,
for any of my fights across my life.
What was your role?
I was basically playing myself in a, like, a hyper kind of hyper realistic version of myself, and I wasn't saying my own, like, I had to learn lines and recite lines, and it was daunting, but I have to admit the buzz I got off after it, like, it was,
yeah.
I was actually like, it was nearly better than most of my fights, because most fights you win and you're like, yeah, I was expecting
also
to win,
you don't get your head beaten off, yeah.
Yeah, as well, yeah.
Somebody can give you a hug afterwards, yeah, if you're not flinching.
Yeah, but I'd prefer to take a beating than, like, go up there and choke or forget a line. I'd prefer to take a few shots in the face.
Was it something addictive?
Like, no, I enjoyed it. Like,
would you do it again?
No, I don't know. I shouldn't be revealing all this, but I actually am doing a part-time course in Bow Street. Yeah, in Bow Street, acting in drama school. Yeah,
right.
It's in Smithfield, and my wife signed me up as a Christmas present. You know, she knew that I would enjoy it.
That's career guidance.
Yeah. She was probably like, come on now. This was before I retired, you know, and she was like, yeah. But so that's filling up a lot of my time, you know, I'm doing that 2 days a week. And yeah.
Who are you watching?
I'm watching everything. Like, we actually watched the scene with On the Waterfront where Marlon Brando is, where he's talking to the girl and he's trying to chat her up. And, like, it's like you said, like, what Scott says, he says, like, you can just relate to him because he's just like a young New York kind of a guy. And I've met those guys so many times. Like, I'd seen the film a lot when I was younger, but just rewatching it recently. And he's walking down the street with the girl. And he's rapping to her. He's trying to, you know, trying to anything he can to get to, and she takes off her glove and he takes her glove. And, like, he's on the swings and he puts the glove on. And it's like, such a, like, I was like, oh, that was like a real kind of sexual innuendo. Like, and I'm not sure if he, like, improvised that or whatever it was, but it, like, great film.
Yeah,
great film.
And have you any other, was there any TV experience or any other acting?
Oh, I don't want to reveal too much. it doesn't really, I'm being part, like, I don't want to be part of the cliche of the boxer who goes into acting now, you know? Like, it's, so I just keep stumped.
You haven't got an IMDb page yet, no?
No, don't.
That's the next step.
No. We can set it up, you don't worry. But John Duddy's doing it. He's
John,
like,
Duddy's, yeah. And a lot of a lot of boxers do try to go into acting. And I said it's probably an easy transition, because even within Bow Street and the course that I'm doing, it's all about preparation and ownership. And it's a very, like, I can just relate everything to boxing and how it relates to boxing.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that makes sense. It's a very transferable.
I'm sorry, I know I've probably skipped a lot. Like, it's an, like, When We Were Kings is probably one of the greatest.
That's the thing.
It's a documentary.
And
I don't
it ruins
know.
And boxing movies, I think, a little bit after. The films that come after that have to be absolutely sensational, because When We Were Kings is like a high watermark for documentary making, for boxing, for history, for storytelling. It's like, it's the perfect film. Mm. You can't kind of, there's no flaws in that. And, like, I saw that in the cinema. So I don't know if I'm ever going to have the same experience again where you're just like, holy shit, that's amazing.
You should definitely put that back on in the Lighthouse at some point, maybe the next anniversary of Ali or something, because as you say, missing the opportunity to see that in the cinema was one of the biggest regrets.
There's like for a lot, like, you know, boxing movies kind of come along in spurts where you get like five boxing movies in the space of a year and then there'll be 2 or 3 years where there won't be a boxing movie. And I always thought there was room for a real, like, real, true, I think there is, but as far as I'm concerned, Journeyman really nails it on the head, like really nails it on the head as terms of all the small details and the boxing. The boxing itself, like that's one thing I'm always critical of, and like The Fighter is a great film, but the boxing is like, well, they did get a lot of the details right in terms of the ring and the shorts he wore and some of the work and Christian Bale's performance as Dickie Eklund is sensational. But in terms of a film and a boxing film, I like. The boxing was just Mark Wahlberg. I think his technique wasn't good enough, you know. And his body didn't look like, you can see. You have to have the boxer's body was too muscular, you know. And same with Jake Gyllenhaal in Southpaw. Like, and I heard all these stories about how he was going through this training regime and he was training in Church Street in New York. But it looks like to me, he was on juice. Yeah. You know, it looks to me, because you can tell the type of muscle it is.
Yeah.
That it's not from boxing, you know. It's more. Look, you can see it there. He looks more like a. Like a power lifter or something, you know, I wouldn't say.
As opposed to a fighter.
Yeah.
Although a lot of fighters are starting to look like that these days. And do people come to you and ask you about, like, you know, for, can you give us a bit of guidance about this?
Yeah, well, I would have talked to Paddy Considine a little bit about that kind of thing. And I know he came to a lot of fights and he got, like, he did pick up a lot from going to the fights in terms of, even in Journeyman, like, he uses Coogan Cassius for his interview. And, you know, like, got a lot of the extras from there. And there was a film. There's a film actually being made by Kieran Cassidy, who's a young Dublin director. It's called Tomato Can, and it's a great story. It's a short film about a kind of a washed-up boxer who gets stuck with his daughter, minding his daughter for the day of a fight, and he's a journeyman, like he's a tomato can. It's a great film. It's going to be a great film. It's not out yet. And they got Thomas McCartney, who's a Belfast boxer, to play the role. I wasn't available, so. Yeah.
Cass is a genius. He's made some absolutely brilliant some rated documentaries. So that's
there you go.
Was he actually
actually Jake Gyllenhaal?
That's Jake Gyllenhaal, yeah.
It's not, it doesn't even look like him.
Yeah, it looks a lot.
Seine Linke ist seine starste Waffe. So that's obviously the German poster. But like, holy shit.
I haven't seen it. Is he a Southpaw in the movie or is it just
sure
a poster?
He is. I haven't watched it either. I saw the trailer and like his wife gets killed in a press conference, it seems. And I was like,
no thanks.
I don't need to watch this, you know.
So somebody threw a water bottle at her or something?
I got Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I've queued up on Netflix.
So this is right. Okay. Yeah, it's a bit of a, that's a bit of a grim start.
Okay, so Raging Bull's number one, Journeyman, On the Waterfront, Somebody Out There Likes Me. Cinderella Man, we haven't talked about that. Russell Crowe said that for a screen actor, being in a boxing movie is like being in Hamlet. He said it's his favourite role. So Cinderella Man is J.J. Braddock, is that it?
Yeah, J.J. Yeah. Braddock and James J. Braddock. And it's a story of, you know, set in the Depression. It's a true story and about a man's struggle and his perseverance, and he gets a shot, and like a lot of fighters, and like, it's related to my own, like, gets a shot out of the blue and kind of takes it, you know, when he's down at his lowest ebb and takes the chance. And like, there's a bit of trivia, like, he did very well, even though he won the title. He defended against Joe Lewis shortly after, and he only had two fights after that. He negotiated for himself to earn 10% of Joe Lewis's future earnings.
Right.
For the next decade.
Right.
After the fight. So he kind of, like, he did a great job. And his manager's played by Paul Giamatti. I think his name's something Ghoul or something like that. But he has a great part, and he's a great actor, Paul Giamatti. And
their
dynamic. So, yeah, it's definitely up there. Like, that and The Fighter would be on even terms, I think. And like, there's so many, Requiem for a Heavyweight with Anthony Quinn, and that's just, boxing has always kind of been, I think.
Kieran Cunningham was talking to us, is tweeting us about the Emile Griffith movie that Lenny Abramson has is working on. He's bought the rights to Donald McRae's book.
Yeah, I spoke to Lenny Abramson about that. Like, you asked me to, I had dinner with Lenny Abramson, and he's like, he was just asking about boxing and what it's like, and the sound, like the book is a really, really good book.
It's an incredible story.
Yeah, it sounds like. And I'd met Emile Griffin a lot of times.
Had you?
Yeah.
All
right. In New York. He would, like, towards the end of his life, he would have been not down and out, but like living from week to week or whatever, you know, like he wouldn't have had the most affluent lifestyle towards the end. And he would have always hung around the New York scene and been at fights. And I always wondered, like, it was a bit strange, like, not that it's a lot, like, I always wonder why people were a little bit stand in the boxing circles, were a little bit stand. I didn't know he was gay. I didn't know he was gay. And I guess it was an open secret in boxing or whatever it was. And I was like so thrilled to meet him, and always chat to him, and you know, this was Emile Griffin, like, it was just all time great Hall of Fame fighter. Like, I think he's won five world titles in different divisions, and
there's still homophobia in boxing, really, isn't there?
There is, but more so back then, and more so then, and
from the older guys, more
older guys. Yeah, they were always kind of standoffish with him, and I always wondered why there wasn't such a more of a bigger deal, and it wasn't until after, like, I read the book and I realized, oh. I didn't know he was gay, you know, and I wouldn't have made a difference, you know, but then it kind of made sense, you know, it kind of just clicked. But
did you ever talk to him? So for people who are unfamiliar, Emile Griffith killed somebody in the ring live on national television. It's like when boxing is still on every Saturday evening, and it's like millions and millions and millions and millions of people are watching Saturday night, 8 o'clock. He kills a guy in the ring, and the guy he kills in the ring is a guy who the previous, in the build up to the fight, had accused him of being gay publicly, and Griffith had said, did Griffith say I was going to kill you?
Yeah,
he was definitely like, I'll kill you, and then he does kill him.
Yeah, and it affected him for the rest of his career, and I know the film will be being made soon, but there's a great documentary on it called Man on Fire, and if you can watch, I think it's on YouTube, you can watch it, and it's in parts on YouTube, and that's really an affecting, like...
Did you talk to him about that?
I never talked to him about that, you know, I'm not going to just
walk. Oh, you killed a guy in the ring.
Yeah, I know. I think, I'm sure he was trying to, like, he's been living with it and trying not to remind himself of it every day, but...
But he was into fashion as well, that's the other thing.
Yeah, like, he was a flamboyant character at the time, and he was married twice, I think, and has kids and stuff, but it wasn't until later on in life that he was kind of openly living as a gay man. But like that incident where he killed a man in the ring, it affected him for the rest of his career. And he says in the documentary, I could never fully hit anybody after that, you know? Yeah. His career does definitely take a downturn after that fight.
It's got to be near completion at this point. I've heard Abrahamson talking about that for years now at this point.
Yeah,
like,
I know. It's
everything takes ages, though.
Takes a while, yeah. So maybe he'll cast me as somebody in the
film. Yeah.
like, that's the type of thing that you kind of would also happily sit and watch a 12-part HBO/Netflix series about, you know? Like, I wonder, is that the next thing where we actually stop talking just about boxing movies, but we start seeing good boxing TV series, like, you know?
Yeah, well, I know there was Counterpunches on Netflix, and I haven't fully watched it, even though I do. I'm in it. Did you see it?
Yeah, I've only seen that bit.
Jay Bugler is a New York director. He made it, and it follows three fighters, one professional, one amateur. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
And another one, one is a champion fighter, which is Kid Chocolate, who I fight in the duration of the documentary. And one is an up-and-coming guy, turning pro, and one's an amateur. And I just skip through. I just flick through Netflix, you know, to see my little scene, see what... And they, like, I was going to pull him up on it, but they completely edited the film, like, looked like I got hammered. You know? Like, it didn't include all my knockdowns and, like...
Controversial draw as Kid Chocolate batters Andy Lee.
So hopefully there is, like, it is, and I know there's a lot of documentaries, and they're probably good. I haven't watched them. Like, Sergio Martinez has a documentary. There's a film about Roda Duran, Hands of Stone, which John Duddy acts in.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he plays Ken Buchanan.
Okay.
In the film.
So that's a movie as opposed
to a movie. Yeah, it's a feature film, and. Yeah, there's so many, like Clarissa Shields, the female fighter, the two-time Olympic gold medalist, she has a Netflix documentary, I think it's called Tyrannosaur or something like that, or Tyrannosaurus Rex.
We might do documentaries separately then at some point in after the controversy dies down from your top five for this one today.
Has there been much hit up on the...
Not yet, it's early days. We'll once we put the list out though.
Once you put this out at prime time, I'll be getting crucified.
Andy, great stuff. Thanks very much for joining us.
So
we'll stick that top five up on offtheball.com. So here's Matt Williams talking about why Ireland need to play more attacking rugby before we get to Micheál Quirk, who's standing by. OTB AM.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.